Eric, welcome to the show. We were just talking before the show that we actually met 5 or 6 years ago. What were you doing back then, and what have you done in the intervening years that led you to Stack Blitz?
Yeah, this is a good question. I think when we met back 5, 6 years ago, so it must have been 6 actually, because at the time my co-founder and I, we were running a company called Thinkster. And it was, if you kind of think of like plural sites, like a subscription model, you know, for educational content, we were teaching like full stack web development. And so it was a bootstrap company. And it, actually the big problem we ran into with teaching full stack web development was not even like teaching like React or Angular or whatever concepts. It was like helping people get their dev environment set up was actually the hardest part of the whole thing. Is people be like, oh, my computer's out of file watchers, like, and React is broken. We're like, nah, like React's not broken. Your computer's just messed up. And so the short of it is that we ended up creating what ended up being Stack Blitz, which is like an in-browser dev environment to solve this problem. But it ended up taking on a life of its own and just has been growing like a weed since then. We launched it 5 years ago as of like last week. And so we ended up selling our previous company. And so now we've been working full time on Stack Blitz.
So you were able to sell the education company.
Yeah, it was actually really stressful. I kind of glazed over all the worst parts of that because it was like actually a really difficult time because Thinkster was, you know, had a couple hundred thousand students at its peak that were using the thing, and Stack Blitz rocketed to a million users a month. I think within a year of us putting it online, so we were kind of as a two man shop, we were effectively running, you know, like kind of two startups. And so we had to choose, you know, which one we wanted to focus on full time. And you know, fortunately, we ended up meeting a guy named Joe Eames, who's, you know, one of the top authors at Pluralsight. And he actually runs like NG Conf and a couple other conferences. And he actually ended up acquiring Thinkster from us. And he's been running it ever since.
Awesome. Well, let's get into Stack Blitz. So actually, I guess the place to start is what's going on with full stack JavaScript development these days?
Yeah, no, good question. I think there's a lot. And I think to kind of step back, I guess it might help for us to kind of to start with what's kind of different about Stack Blitz versus other online IDE things. Because I think that might kind of set the floor. So the online IDEs are not really a new idea per se, right? And I think probably the first major one was like Cloud9 back in like the early 2010s. There's been kind of a handful of these things since then, like GitHub's got Codespaces now and et cetera. So the key thing that we realized with Stack Blitz back 5 years ago, that kind of blew our minds is that, you know, when we were running into this problem of like getting an environment, a dev environment that would be like reproducible and not run into issues, and we're like teaching Node.js based tool chains, we were like, you know, all these tools that people use for web development are written in JavaScript, right? Like Webpack and, you know, Rollup, et cetera. You know, shouldn't it be like theoretically possible to like just, you know, kind of copy pasta that and like run it inside of the browser itself, right? And this is very different from like, if you look at Codespaces or Cloud9, the way that they actually do that compute work is they spin up a VM for every single user who comes to it, and they execute the code on some VM, and they like stream the results of that back across the internet, right? So it's like, it's actually a worse experience than a local dev environment because you're introducing latency to the server. Someone's got to pick up the bill for that. So usually it's not free. You have to sign up. And they're brutally slow. And, you know, we realized, you know, if you could actually get this stuff to run natively inside the browser itself, you'd have all the benefits of a local environment. It works offline. It's super fast. There's no latency. There's no cost because it's like the person's, you know, computer is using electricity to actually do the compute work. So anyway, so the short of it is that we kind of had this realization that, you know, that this might be possible. And so fast forward a couple of years, and this has actually become increasingly the case, even in full stack web development. If you look at things like Next.js, they're blending the backend, what would be considered the backend code, with the front-end code. We're actually just writing one code base. And if it's running on a server, it's doing, you know, different sorts of logic. But if it's running on the client, it knows how to kind of seamlessly request that data in a way that's kind of transparent to you, right? So, you know, well, I guess I can kind of pause there. But I think that's kind of the big trend, is that there's kind of this convergence happening in the JavaScript world where, like, what used to be like, you know, browser only or Node.js only or whatever have you, they're converging, and which is enabling very interesting types of architectures to be possible.
Such as?
Such as, I mean, I think the most extreme example is probably, I mean, Next.js, you know, in general, I think for like general web application development kind of strikes that mark. But if you look at like what we recently rolled out with Stack Blitz, so back in May, so like what, 3 months ago, we actually rolled out this new technology called Web Containers, where essentially it allows you to mount full Node.js containers inside of your browser, right? So it's like literally allowing you to run Node.js unmodified inside of your web browser. And the benefits you get with that is that one, it's all the things I mentioned previously, super fast, et cetera. But two, it actually makes debugging super easy, because now you can actually crack open Chrome DevTools on a web page and actually be debugging server-side Node.js code, right? So like when you're talking about a developer environment, that's actually like a huge boon for like productivity and like, you know, developer experience, versus like if you're on local, having to like connect to like, you know, the Chrome debugging protocol for like that node process, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So kind of across the board, browsers have gotten really, really, really powerful. And there's like more and more types of very sophisticated applications now that can actually run in browsers where it like was not possible before.
What's the sandboxing properties of a web container?
Yeah, good question. So it's actually the exact same as your browser. So that's like one of the kind of the key selling points of the thing, is that it respects the same, you know, kind of cross-origin isolation that you know, Chrome's security sandbox has, right? So like when you open up stackblitz.com and you start a Node.js or an Next.js project or whatever have you, that's actually being entirely limited to that browser tab, right? Which is like, you know, very like a huge step function upgrade from a security perspective. And it's actually like Stackblitz's business is entirely on that. Like we actually sell primarily to Fortune 500 companies that are trying to protect themselves against supply chain attacks and also increase the productivity of their developers. But by actually moving the dev environment into the browser, it actually protects them from, you know, if you download some malicious NPM script, it actually can't shell out to the rest of your computer. It's completely isolated to this WebAssembly-based container that we've created that, you know, mounts instantly in your browser.
Okay, let me ask you a question. If I have code running in a web container, or for that matter, any of these Chrome sandboxed environments, and I have a React component on my web page, can the browser sandbox modify the React component on my web page?
Can the browser sandbox, like,
how
do you mean?
What I'm asking is basically, is there message passing between this web container or any of these browser sandboxes that you're describing that are the same as a web container? Is there message passing between that and like, let's say a React component on your page?
You can, right? I mean, like, I think that, effectively, the only way to do that is that like we have like a WebSocket API or something like that, right? So like, if, you know, in the case of like how I think for what you're describing, at least, is like, can that somehow connect? Like, so for example, in a Next.js application, there's like hot reloading. So there's like message passing that does happen via the WebSocket protocol, right? And so in that instance, you have a React component on like the front end of that Next.js application in the dev mode or whatever, that's talking to the backend code, and when there is a change, it instructs that to, you know, load this module.
But, talking to other front end code is what I'm saying. So like, let's say you have like one React component talking to another React component. They can pass messages between each other, right?
If they're being rendered in the same like web page per se, yeah, absolutely, right? I'd have to understand a little more about the use case you're describing.
Theoretical example. I've got a blank web page. It's blank except for a single React component that says "Hello World," and then another React component that is like, you know, Jeff's malicious React component. And Jeff's malicious React component is just trying to send messages to the Hello World React component in order to get the Hello World React component to change. Is that possible?
Oh, got it. Yeah, yeah. So, if, I mean, if you effectively, if you have malicious code that's executing on the same origin or same domain as your code, yeah, you're kind of in a world of trouble, right? So that would be like super bad. Typically, the supply chain attack, and I think this kind of tying back to this, the supply chain attacks thing that I had mentioned, like the, from a security perspective, or like kind of what are you probing on for this question?
Well, so it's kind of a Socratic dialogue, but like what I'm trying to ask is like, you know, if you have a rogue front end component, let's say an imported front end component, let's say literally I say, you know, like at the top of my React application, like whatever it is, like import Jeff's malicious like React component from some other place. All you're doing is just like summoning, you know, just making a network call. When you load this web page, you're making a network call out to Jeff's malicious web components.com and retrieving Jeff's malicious web component, you know, .jsx or whatever. It's hitting the page, it's rendering, and then you have the Hello World component that you wrote yourself. What I'm asking is, can this malicious component that you've imported interact with the Hello World?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think that, yeah, that's kind of outside of this. Yeah. Like that's kind of outside of the scope of like, what like StackBlitz necessarily, or like web
engineers
could necessarily.
I understand. This is something I've been researching a lot. I'm just kind of curious about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally. I mean, like it's a real problem. So, and that, like, you know, for a lot of, you know, large companies, this is exactly why they don't rely on, you know, CDNs and that sort of thing. And this is like kind of, you know, where I think even things like Dino might have a bit of an issue, is that there actually is value, right, to enterprises in particular of like having very hard set origins, right, where they're going to get packages and that sort of thing, where they can scan these things and vet them and, you know, kind of yada yada, right? But yeah, absolutely. Like what you just described is totally, totally a, you know, a potential attack vector, you know, if someone were to, you know, there's actually been cases of this where, you know, there's a CDN back a while ago, Unpackage. You might have heard of it. It's like, you know, the CDN for everything on NPM. And I think they forgot to like renew their DNS or something like that. But for like a day, there was like these pop-ups showing up on, you know, all these sites.
Oh, this happened to me.
Sites,
this happened to me.
Yeah.
This happened to me. There turned out there was some rogue WordPress component we had. One day we started serving those like kind of Taboola kind of ads that were like, you know, use worms to reconfigure your hairline, or, you know, consume gumballs until you can have a reverse mortgage, or, you know, you won't believe these top 10 links for geriatric drug abuse or something. You know, these like really horrible ads that nobody actually clicks on, and everybody knows that nobody clicks on them, but they're the way that the internet gets paid, and we don't really question them. So these started appearing on softwareengineeringdaily.com one day, and we couldn't figure out which plugin was doing it until we just started disabling all the random WordPress plugins we had.
Wow, that's insane. I mean, that's like a great example, right, of like, you know, modern software is surprising. It's surprising how insecure a lot of the defaults are with a lot of this stuff. And that's kind of been one of the key things for us over the past 5 years that we've learned a lot about, is, man, there's a lot of holes. And I mean, now over the past year, it's become an issue because you have nation states now that are actually funding these attacks, and it's getting pretty serious. So I think over the next half decade or decade, there's a lot that's going to have to happen to prevent these things. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people are a lot of companies are adopting, you know, like Chromium in general is like the work that's been done there. It's like the, you know, perhaps the most well security tested piece of software ever known to man, maybe outside of some secret stuff, you know, in the government or something. But if you look at like Cloudflare workers, like their entire security model is based on, you know, the guarantees that V8 gives you, right, for you know, secure multi-tenancy and that sort of thing. But so this is like a lot of what you know, Google has, you know, invented with Chromium, is invested in, is actually being used to protect against some of the worst of this stuff, which is pretty interesting.
Right, but okay, so returning to my example though, let's take it a step further. So let's say I have a web page. All it has is, again, a Hello World component, and let's say a Facebook like button. So if I import the Facebook like button, let's say it's actually controlled by like kind of an evil, malicious version of Facebook. Let's say it's like a bizarro world where like Facebook is a malicious company, and this like button loads on your page, and the first thing that the like button does is it turns the Hello World component into another like button. Is that possible?
I mean, it depends. If you're importing JavaScript that's just going to like execute, yeah, like absolutely, right? I mean, I think a lot of these like button things or whatever from Facebook are typically cross origin iframes, in which case like no, it wouldn't be possible, right? But like, yeah, anytime you're like taking arbitrary JavaScript and throwing it on your page, I mean, you're pretty much giving that script the ability to do whatever it wants to your page, right? So the question is, how much do you trust that code, right? Reading through it. And then also, is that on a domain that you own? Because if it's not, then how what's your guarantee that that domain's not going to end up in the hands of a rogue actor, right? So I think that's kind of the tree of questions I think you'd have from a security perspective there.
So if I import a like button, it's in a cross origin iframe?
Typically, I mean, yeah, I mean, like, you know, at least back in the day, I'm not sure what they're doing these days, but I mean, that's like, you know, the Facebook like button, you know, used to be a iframe effectively that you would put in your web page. Then it was like, you know, hosted off of Facebook server or whatever, right? And that does give you a really good security guarantee, because if you're just putting an iframe on your page that is cross origin isolated, it doesn't have access to actually execute code on the main thread outside of that iframe then. And that's actually how we do, like, that's a big part of how we do our security model with like web container effectively.
So is there not a way to post messages to other threads or to communicate messages to other threads?
Yeah, so you can use like the post message API, but the question is like, is the main thread listening for those messages? And if it is it going to send something back, right? Like and that's user code. So like that's code you would be providing.
But it doesn't need to send anything back. It doesn't need to send anything back. You just need to send messages from the malicious button to the other component, and it's just a one-way thing. It just needs to send messages to that button and then have that button do what it wants to do, right? It just needs to be unidirectional.
Gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, it can definitely post message to its parent thread for sure. Yeah. And then it's just, is that thread listening for messages and what does it do with them and that sort of thing?
Which it most likely is, right? So if I have this Hello World component and then I load the malicious Facebook like button and then the malicious Facebook like button starts posting messages to try to convince the Hello World component to change into a like button, that is conceivable, right?
Yeah, I mean, you would have to intentionally add an event listener for the messages coming up, and then for a cross origin frame, you also have to specify like a wildcard. So there's kind of a couple of things you would have to do as the owner of that website to like allow those post messages to even make it to the main.
But I'm saying yeah. Like from a malicious point of view, like let's say this like button is somehow malicious. You import this malicious button. It's trying to convince the Hello World component to turn into a like button. Is there a way to do that? Let's put it even simply. Okay, you've got basically just a Hello World React component. It's just an educational like website that you're building. It's a Hello World React component. And then the next thing you do is like, okay, now I want to import a like button to this page. You're just messing around as a developer. But let's say you accidentally import like the malicious Facebook like button. All the malicious Facebook like button tries to do is change all of the other elements on the page into malicious Facebook like buttons. I'm saying, is it possible to design that malicious like button? Is it possible to design that?
Yeah. I think so. Right. I mean, especially if you're executing arbitrary JavaScript on that page, absolutely. Right. Because you effectively have full control over that page at that point. Right.
Right. So every page generally is going to be able to do this. Every page is able to do this. And if you did import this malicious button, it would have the rights. It would have the potential to transform this Hello World component into whatever it wants to.
Yeah. Yeah. Generally speaking. Yeah. Like anytime you import a JavaScript library, you are opening up this type of attack effectively.
Right. So now let's like talk about the real world. So let's say I just import a normal Facebook like button on a web page. You would agree that the same is true, that Facebook could, if they wanted to, essentially pass messages to change the components on your web page.
Yeah, I think, with the caveat of like, if you're importing a JavaScript file from Facebook CDN, which I think is kind of the default that they push you towards. Yeah. Like they could swap that code out to do any other number of bad things. Yeah.
So for example, Facebook, if you made this page, Facebook could take that Hello World component and blow it up into an entire web page that looks like Facebook, for example. So Facebook could, like, if they were malicious, they could basically do this strategy to take your Hello World page and maliciously turn your website into Facebook.
It's certainly possible. It'd be an interesting growth strategy for Facebook to do. but it's certainly possible. Like if they have JavaScript executed on your webpage.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's like a little bit more terrifying than interesting, and I think this is a possibility, right? Like this is a legitimate possibility. This could happen. Let me take it a step further. Do you know anything about React Native?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how much, but certainly, you know, as a technology, I'm familiar with it.
Could this same technique be used to essentially repaint a native application?
If the native application is pulling in, certainly, right? Like, I mean, in the scenarios we're talking about, we're kind of talking about, if you're importing third-party JavaScript, like, yeah, absolutely, right? Like, I think that, I mean, and this, I think the same applies for, a lot of other languages as well. Like this is kind of common across the industry is like, if you're importing third-party libraries, they can get unfettered access, right? Typically to your application at runtime. And I think that's kind of the major issue here. Right. I think like React Native, you publish a malicious React Native application. There's nothing really stopping it necessarily from going in and, you know, infecting that runtime, right?
That's not even what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, let's say I load, like, literally, like, SoundCloud, and SoundCloud doesn't even have React Native in it. But I'm operating on an insecure Wi-Fi network. And because of that insecure Wi-Fi network, a malicious attacker is able to send down the necessary binaries to install and run React Native on my iOS application, on my iPhone, and basically repaint SoundCloud to look like something else. Is that possible?
Potentially, right? I mean, I think just about anything is possible, you know. And I think because now we're kind of getting into the question in some sense of like end to end encryption and that sort of thing, and like, you know, man in the middle attacks, right? And so I think it kind of depends on the implementer, but like, yeah, sure. I mean, like theoretically, absolutely, it has been done before, definitely.
So here's what I'm getting at. By the way, I'd love to talk to you about StackBlitz, but. So I went to DEF CON recently, and I believe that this attack happened to me.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I was wondering where this is going. I was like, this is kind of specific. Okay. So I'm interested. So tell me about this.
So I experienced my native applications being taken over and repainted.
Wow.
Yeah. It was terrifying.
Was this like on iOS or like Android or
on iOS?
Wow. What was it being repainted?
No, I'm sorry. It was Android. Okay. I'm now an iOS user.
I was like, that is surprise. I was like, you know, if it's Android, yeah. I'm going to be like, okay, you know.
No, here's the other thing. So I went to DEF CON. I basically said, look, I'm going to do gonzo journalism. I'm going to get myself destroyed at DEF CON. I just took my devices. I took three cell phones and a laptop to DEF CON and just got myself pwned. I didn't really do anything to like let myself get pwned. I just heard that, you know, if you go to DEF CON, you're going to get pwned if you take your devices. You're apparently not supposed to take devices to DEF CON. But being myself, I took my devices and I got pwned. So I was just like hanging out at my, my CTO's, the super, super compute CTO, Nick Daigler's hotel. and I'm logging into the insecure hotel Wi-Fi, and you know, within a matter of hours, just like two out of three of my cell phones are completely bricked. One of them was a brand new iPhone. It was completely bricked. I mean, it was in every meaningful sense bricked. I couldn't use the internet. It was really weird. Like, it was a brand new phone. It was bricked. I couldn't access the internet. The only two things, like two devices I could access the internet on were my laptop, which was acting super weird, and an Android phone. And the Android phone was my main phone before I switched to iPhone after this experience. So I took my Android phone to the gym at one point, and I experienced this repainting attack. I call it a UI attack. I don't know what else to call it. It scared the living hell out of me. It was super scary because I saw some shit that just was terrifying. Imagine if somebody wanted to repaint your application experience to terrify you. Do you think that's possible?
Like, I would be pretty terrified. I mean, it's certainly possible, but like it, you know, as without direct access to the device, it's, you know, it would be surprising, right?
Really? Are you sure about that?
I mean, to me at least, right? To me, for something we will take over my native application runtime on my phone, I would be surprised, right? Like it's certainly not, you know, I mean, as an iOS user, I would be surprised if something actually could alter the native runtime of my phone. Absolutely.
But isn't that exactly what React Native does?
In the sense that you're manipulating native elements using a different like rendering engine,
using JavaScript.
Yeah, but I think the caveat there, right, is like it's being bundled in with the application binary, right? Like I wouldn't expect it to like be able to be exploited over the air. You know what I mean? Although I guess with Expo, actually, that's an interesting implication, is that if you could actually, because you know Expo, there are, well, these things that allow over the air updates without pushing to the App Store, that's actually an interesting. I never even thought about that. That actually is a kind of a that's an attack vector that is kind of scary,
it's
right?
Terrifying. It's terrifying.
Yeah, holy cow! I never thought about that, because you're actually sidestepping the App Store review process, and you're allowing third party code to just download and execute on demand, which is interesting from a native device perspective. Frightening, because the native installed apps have permissions, right? That like if you're browsing the internet casually, you know, the sandboxing on that stuff tends to be quite good, right? It's interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know if you saw, but like I started tweeting about this yesterday, and I posted a YouTube video. The YouTube video got taken down somehow. And basically a bunch of like, you know, Facebook employees just disagreed with me vociferously. And I'm like, okay, like prove me wrong. And they said, show me your evidence. What evidence do you need? This is possible, right? It's possible.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's pretty frightening. That's like actually pretty frightening.
So I literally I spent 2.5 years writing a laudatory book about Facebook. I don't know if you knew that, called Move Fast. It was the number one book in software engineering for some time. I think now it's number two or number three on Amazon. It's super laudatory of the company. I love React. I love the ecosystem. I think they built Linux for the front end, basically. It is a project that is as important as Linux. It has brought us together as a software community, but it is also as dangerous as Linux if it's not managed properly. And I think that Facebook is making a really big mistake by trying to manage this all themselves.
Oh, like the development of React, you mean?
Yeah, it's not real open source. It's fake open source.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that, actually. It definitely does seem to be a bit of a black box.
How is it that way? Like, do you have any idea how hooks work? Do you have any idea how hooks load data onto your screen?
You know,
you're not an expert. You're not a JavaScript expert. How would you know? Like, I'm not a highly technical software podcaster with 1,600 hours of experience, how would I know how React hooks work?
Yeah, well, I think this is just an issue across the industry, right? Like we're all standing on the shoulders of giants, right? And I think that the problem is that we've kind of gotten away with this because there's been more good actors than bad, but we're at a point now where the attackers, people who have an incentive to attack these things have realized that, you know, doing these brute force attacks, you know, companies have gotten pretty good at securing their API endpoints or whatever, right? But it's actually a lot easier to go after the developers who are building that software in the first place. Like those are the people that have a target on their back now. Is these, you know, anyone working in an enterprise company as a software developer has a gigantic target on their back because that's where supply chain attacks are slipping in, is during the development process, right? Anytime you're relying on a open source package, which is like all the time, right? You know, how often, I mean, how realistic to your point, right? Is like, do you even have the requisite knowledge/time to like, for a package you're going to go install, to go pour over every line and go, okay, yeah, this like looks legit. Like, you know, imagine like a 10,000 line library that for like charting a graph or something, right? It's like, no, like you're not, like, you're going to look at the number of downloads and, you know, I don't know, whatever, right? Determine if this is something you want to use, and you're going to install it. Right. And that is exactly how this stuff happens. And then it slips in, and now you have something that is malicious that, you know, like with, you know, nearly every modern development tool chain has access to your entire computer now. Right. And there's this terrible, you know, worm vector in the NPM ecosystem in particular around the post install, script field, that's been unaddressed for like 5 years. Like this got brought up by Sam Saccone like 5 years ago. Has not been addressed. We're actually the first people that have addressed the thing. And we're, you know, we're just like a startup, you know, like doing this stuff. But it's pretty frightening. Like I hate to say it, I think we're at the beginning stages. I think we're just starting to see what happens when there's an incentive to actually go and invest in attacking developers and developer environments and the software that they're writing, you know?
So this was such a jarring experience for me. It was actually super jarring for Nick too. He was also terrified. He experienced his own. I don't even want to go into some of the other stuff we've been experiencing lately. Suffice to say, my tinfoil hat is like very on right now. I started to basically like imagine. I thought, first of all, this repainting attack, like, it could have taken place in any number of ways, right? There could have been any number of vectors that could have done this, right? And I was talking to a React, I'll say, a React heavy knowledge expert. I won't say more than that. Person who was basically saying, hey, look, this is actually not the easiest way to do this kind of attack. Like, maybe you could do it, but, you know, actually, this is just really not the best way to do it. He sends me a link to some super obscure, like, PHP library that you can use. I'm like, dude, if somebody wants to hack the UI, they're going to use React. Why would they use anything else? If they want to hack the UI on a native device, they're going to use React Native. Why would they use anything else? It's basically made to do this. And as I realized that, I became terrified because I realized, like, we're already living in the metaverse. We're already living in Zuck's metaverse. If he wants to change anything that we're seeing, he can do it. Anything. Not just anything on a Facebook website, not just anything on a React website, anything. Whether it's Vue.js, whether it's Angular, whether it's the Google effing .com website. If he wants to change the Google search results, he can do that. If you have like, if you have some random Chrome extension that he happens to own, Zuck can change your search results.
With the assumption that there's like a backdoor in React or something, or like some,
I mean, come on, man, is this a right? Is this a backdoor? It's a message passing to any shared state, and by shared state, I mean like any freaking like thing you can sneak a one and a zero through. Did you ever take a security class in computer science? Or you studied computer science, right?
Or did no, you? I'm actually entirely self-taught. Yeah.
Self-taught. Okay, sure. Yeah. So, same like, thing. So I'm not trying to denigrate. Whatever. I took a security class that I dropped out of. But on like the first project, basically what they teach you is if you can sneak a one and a zero through any hole, you can sneak an entire program through that hole. And I feel like, dude, the browser is just full of these little holes you can sneak ones and zeros through.
To an extent. So I think that, so browsers actually do quite good in this regard, right? Because, like, you know, as we sit here right now, Google's got 15,000 cores fuzzing that code base. And fuzzing meaning trying to sneak ones and zeros effectively through every single API surface, right? And, you know, I think that it's an important measure, right, of, like, how secure something is. One is, like, you know, if you're trying to, like, secure your house, it sure helps to have locks on the door, you know? That's like a good structural principle, you know, for building something that's secure, is like, you know, making it non-obvious how you break into the thing. The flip side of it too, though, is like how well tested it is. Like if you take the safe out of Fort Knox, that doesn't mean that no one will ever get into that safe, right? Right. Put that, you know, in front of the Kremlin, you know, Putin's going to have that open within the hour, right? What makes Fort Knox safe is the end-to-end testing of that, right? They have guns and God knows what, and they're running drills all the time on that. That's why Fort Knox is Fort Knox. That's a similar thing with what you have with Chromium, right? Especially now that Microsoft is entering the game, is that, and I'm not saying that these things are not, you know, vulnerable to zero days, but you see a lot less of them than things, you know, on browsers than for things like Windows. And that's because of the security posture, they take it pretty seriously. And they're dumping tons of money into this stuff, right? So to your point, yeah, theoretically possible, sure, right? Just as much as any other kind of piece of software, right? But browsers are unique in the sense that they started off from day zero of browsers, they started off with a zero trust model, right? That is not true, actually, when you look at traditional operating systems. They started off not with the assumption of multi-tenant software that needed to be securely isolated. So browsers actually tend to have some of the best security, period, you know? And that's why we're seeing a lot of companies moving to this stuff, because there's not a lot of other great alternatives. Because again, even if you, and this is the problem with Dino, if you want to build something that's got better door locks, great. But that doesn't mean that it's any harder. Like door locks are to keep the good guys out. Right? That's like that saying. So true there. Dino's putting on better door locks, but we have a more fundamental problem. We should have a more fundamental problem. And that's largely a measure of how much money can you spend? How many cores every minute of the day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, how many cores can you have fuzzing a code base, right? Google's got 15,000, you know, I think the only outside of that it's, you're talking nation states, you know? So anyways, like that's, I think that that's, you know, from a security point of view, I think browsers are uniquely positioned in that regard, right?
Let's actually assume that browsers are as secure as you're sort of suggesting they might be here. We just reviewed the fact that React is essentially obscure to anybody who does not work on the React core team, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the sense it's like a very complicated piece of software for sure. I mean, you could certainly audit it and review the code and compile it yourself or whatever, right?
But nobody does because it's not truly open source.
For sure. Right. Like, they are kind of driving that, the development of that themselves and the initiatives of that themselves in a sense. Right.
Right. So if there is one communication channel that React accidentally or on purpose leaves open for the malicious like button to access, you're borked, right? If they leave open one thing in the library, you're borked.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yes, absolutely. If there is something that is intentionally being left open.
Intentionally,
right,
or unintentionally.
React, or unintentionally for that matter. Okay. Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
And if you had to bet $10,000 as to the binary yes or no answer as to whether such a hole existed, what would you bet on?
In React?
Yes.
I don't know if I would bet on React. I'm
asking binary yes or no. You have to bet $10,000. It can be a 51%, you know, confidence interval or whatever. But like, I'm just asking you. I'm not asking you to bet $10,000 unless you want to.
No. It's a really interesting question because you, like, I, you know, I
because I'm betting my career on this. as a podcast.
You're betting your career on this.
I mean, I don't know if I'm betting my career on this, but I'm basically like coming out and saying, in the face of all these Facebook people and React people, that you guys probably have a problem. You guys probably have a very severe problem. And at minimum, you need to open source this to a Linux Foundation-like entity to help insulate the web against this thing. At minimum.
Ooh, man. I don't disagree, right? Because I think that the popularity of React, I mean, it certainly would not hurt. It certainly would not hurt for them to release it so that it's, you know, to some foundation, right? Where, you know, you can have actual multiple organizations kind of collaborating on the thing, right? And what I will say is, like, you know, Facebook, when you think of the companies that really are leading the bleeding edge of security, you know, Facebook's not at least in the top three, you know, kind of in my view. So, like, you know, with my confidence.
Dude, let's be honest. They actively do the opposite.
Yeah,
did you hear about the VPN company they acquired several years ago?
No, I actually didn't hear about
Facebook
this.
Owns a VPN, I believe. Let's look it up right now. Facebook. Dude, we'll do another show on StackBlitz. I'm sorry. I'm just, I'm kind of irritated.
No, you're good.
Facebook pays teens to install VPN that spies on them. Maybe that's what I'm looking for.
You're talking about where the teenagers, where they were like...
This is something different. This is something different. Oh, wait, what is this? Facebook has been paying users ages 13 to 35 up to $20 per month plus referral fees to sell their privacy by installing the iOS or Android Facebook Research app. Facebook even asked users to screenshot their Amazon order history page. Oh, yeah, that sounds like a company I want to trust my security with. But that's not even what I was looking for. Facebook acquires Israeli VPN is what I'm going to search for. Israeli VPN. Facebook buys mobile analytics company Onovo. Big news for a Monday/late Sunday night, depending on where you are. By the way, this is October 13th, 2013. Onovo, the Tel Aviv-based mobile analytics company, has just announced that it has been acquired by Facebook. Onovo will become the anchor for Facebook in Israel, its first office in the country. Terms of the deal have not been disclosed. Right now, we're seeing reports between $100 million and $200 million. Onovo, which was founded in 2010, has two parts of its business. A consumer-facing apps, sick, to help optimize device and app performance and battery life on iOS and Android. Help optimize device and app performance and battery life on iOS and Android devices. Oh, by the way, another thing that started screwing up after I went to Vegas was my battery life. So I constantly get like a red battery life on my Android devices, and yet it says this is going to last like until the next day. It's fucking weird, man. It'll say red, you're basically at 1%, but it'll last until tomorrow. I'm like, what? That's not accurate. Like, those are just, that's a hypocritical battery life update. So Onovo, which was founded in 2010, has two parts to its business: a consumer-facing apps to help optimize device and app performance and battery life on iOS and Android devices, and an analytics business for mobile publishers to chart how well its own apps are performing, and to chart that against apps of its competitors. It had raised some $13 million in venture funding from investors like Sequoia, Horizons Ventures, Motorola, and Magma Venture Partners. The rationale for the deal is easy to see on a few levels. Facebook has been focusing on building up its mobile business, which is seeing the most growth and is the platform that most users, blah, 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 blah. The technology can be used by Facebook itself to optimize what it offers to its users. Interesting. More practically, Onovo will also give the company a much deeper technology bench to measure how these mobile services are working, who is using them, as well as how to make them work in the most optimized way on mobile devices. This can be applied in a number of areas, both for basic user... By the way, this is on TechCrunch. Facebook buys mobile analytics company Onovo and finally gets its office in Israel. This can be applied in a number of ways, both for basic user experience and commercial ends. One commercial end, performance of mobile ads. Right now, Onovo is all about smartphones. Blah, 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 blah. I don't need to go further on this one. Like, this is sketchy as F, man. It's sketchy. Yeah. This is a sketchy, sketchy company. And I know that because I reported on it for 2.5 years. It's a sketchy cult. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the technology it makes. I fucking love Instagram. I post on it every day. But I'm sorry. It's a sketchy company. Like, what more is there to say? I mean, you're somebody who's basically built their business off of React and Facebook. I'm sure you like the company to a certain extent. But are you creeped out yet?
I've never really liked Facebook as a company. It's not a company I would personally want to work at. I mean, I think for the reasons that you just outlined, right? And I think that Facebook, I mean, it's a kind of an unfortunate situation, right? Because you've got these great people, kind of classic situation. You have these great people that want to work on cool technology, and Facebook kind of provides a way for them to do that, right? And you know, I think back, you know, there's been a lot of decisions that companies make. That, I mean, even the React team themselves at one point, you know, I can't remember what exactly the you know, the incident was, or it was like a year ago, but you know, it's like, it's they've been kind of mired in controversy, right? More so than I think other companies in the space. So I agree with you. I do agree with you. It's actually legitimately, like, you know, I respect the friends I've got that work there, but it's actually really not a company that I what's the mission, I guess, right? Like, what's the mission, and how's the end justify the means? I don't, at least from the outside, it doesn't seem to connect for me.
I'll tell you, the mission. We're living in it. We're living in the metaverse. Welcome to the metaverse. Do you trust what you're looking at on Zoom at this point? Because I'm not sure I do. Is Zoom an Electron app? Like, you know, do you trust what you're seeing in Slack? I know Slack is an Electron app.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one, because it's something I've been thinking about. Is, you know, when AI, right, like, you know, like machine learning generated video gets so good, we're like, when you call you,
let's not even talk about that yet.
But think about it, right? It's insane, right? Like, you call your mom, right, on FaceTime or whatever, or on Zoom, and I mean, genuine concern. 10 years from now, you're gonna have to. I think we're gonna be living in a world where you're like, is that my mom?
Dude, we're already there. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why we're already there. Because we're dealing right now. This is like, I'm really getting into tinfoil hat zone, because you're right there with me, it seems like. Dude, there's a guy that we're dealing with. I can't even talk about this right now. I don't even want to go into this right now. I'm not crazy, right? Tell me I'm not crazy.
No, you're not. I think we're at a tipping point with this technology, though. I think that we're at a tipping point where you're not. I don't think that you're wrong in your viewpoint here, that end user devices are not nearly as secure as they need to be, and the end users, I don't think, are aware of the extent of the issue, and that's a real problem, because you can end up with these very powerful companies or nation states or whatever that can begin interfering in ways that are, I mean, to your experience, are almost impossible to reproduce, right? Like, let's say this Zoom video is fake. How do I prove that? Like, how do I prove that? You know, like, I have no idea. I have no idea how I would actually prove that. If you, you know, I don't know. If you turn into like a robot on, I mean, I could record it, I guess. But like, you know, like I totally. I think we're getting to a very, I say the word interesting, but like it's scary. Like,
did I mention that my video was taken off of YouTube yesterday?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, like, that's, it's concerning to hear, man. Like, it's like, genuinely, it's like, it's concerning to hear.
I don't even want to go into like the number of fucking random network glitches and shit that I've had over the last fucking 2 weeks, man. It's just Thank God I'm surrounded by fucking physical friends, which I was not for a year during the pandemic, man. Like, how'd you do during the pandemic?
I did okay. It was tough. I mean, it was tough, right? I mean, I think...
What I'm trying to say here is I would not have the confidence to basically talk about this if I was still isolated, sitting by myself in a room, you know? Like, but luckily I have, like, people in the physical world who I can see and touch who I assume are still real.
Yeah.
By the way, no, I have no interest in virtual reality or augmented reality. No thanks. Or fucking, like, glasses or whatever.
Yeah. I actually picked up a pair of the Oculuses a while back because I was curious to see where they're at. And to your concerns, right? I mean, that's an even more concerning viewpoint of the future, you know, is like if you can blend the virtual and the real worlds, and you're not really a well-intentioned actor, then it's concerning. I guess I have nothing else to say other than I agree.
So here's what I'd like to do. First of all, like, let's schedule a Stack Blitz episode for like later on or something. I'd really like to do that because I think we were working on super effing cool. And congrats on the investment and stuff. But I am wigged out right now. What I would like to do is I'd like to stop this recording. I'd like to get the video and I'd like to post it while I'm still on the phone with you. Is that okay? Can we do that?
Please? Sure. Okay. If you want to.
Have we sufficiently made the case that there is some security issues here? Or do we need to say anything else? Do we need to talk anything? Is there anything else we need to lay the groundwork of, or like anything we need to do to make this a convincing case?
I think that you've kind of laid out kind of the main issues, right? And I think that it will spur, ideally, a conversation around this stuff, right? Because I think there's been some things that you've brought up that I hadn't considered before, right? As far as attack vectors, but, yeah, I mean, go for it.
I know you did.
This has been an interesting conversation. I was not expecting to talk about any of this. Right?
I know you didn't wake up, intending to be a Mark Zuckerberg dissident, but I've kind of co-opted you.
I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, yeah, I appreciate having this. Has been a fascinating conversation, and I certainly would love to come back and talk about Stackblitz sometime, but I don't disagree. I mean, I think that there are some serious security issues, right? Like, and I think it's worth, you know, kind of.
Okay, great. So I think we've said sufficiently amount. I'm going to stop the recording now. And then I'm going to export it both as video and audio. I'm going to upload it to a few video platforms as well as an audio platform. I want to make sure it's entirely posted before I get off the phone with you. Is that okay? Okay. All right. Stop the recording. Dude, I am freaked the fuck out. I don't, I mean...